I have a secret to share with you. And it's the funniest thing. It's a combination of a couple factors. Here it is. The silver colloid, colloidal silver, it's not the quantity of silver that matters. I think a lot of us have figured that out by now. We've been taught this already, but let's take this thought a little further. It's the suffusion of colloidal silver with oxygen and the stabilization of that suffusion and the administration of that stabilized suffusion of oxygen-enriched colloidal silver. Gee, I lost my train of thought now. I forgot what I was getting to. I made it so long. Let's put it this way. The efficient absorption. Let's put it that way. The utilization. That's what I was saying. That really is the crown on top of that edifice. So let me take you through the steps. First, we make colloidal silver. And it doesn't have to be much. It can be 5 parts per million. Just what they tell us is all we need. Okay, but we have to take it several steps more, and here are all the steps. So the next step is we use chilled water to make the colloidal silver, and we put it back in the fridge in a light prohibited container, you know, glass container. You know, it's on the prior episodes, an amber glass. It's a liter jar. I think I got 2 of them off of Amazon, and I made paper jackets. And I pre-chill the water in a water jug in the fridge, and I use that for making the colloidal silver, and then I put it back in. I put that colloidal silver in the amber glass jars, put that jar in the paper jacket with the paper hood, and put that back in the fridge to chill it down. And then I add, after it's been chilled back down, I add a small amount of hydrogen peroxide, and I believe it was 1/2 teaspoon per liter. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong. It's in a prior episode. I can't remember. I should write it on the paper jacket how much I put on. That would be the smart thing to do. So I think I'll have to go back and revisit one of the episodes that I computed out how much 35% strength food grade hydrogen peroxide to add to a liter of colloidal silver based on what I was using in the bathtub. More or less. I think I was using a cup, 8 ounces, 30 gallons in the tub. Well, I don't want to take up your time refiguring. Well, maybe I should. Just a minute, I'll pause and refigure it. I was right. It's 1/2 teaspoon. 1/2 teaspoon of 35% grade, or 35% strength, food grade hydrogen peroxide per liter of colloidal silver. So you take 1/2 teaspoon of that and add it to the colloidal silver after it's already been pre-chilled, and, you know, shake it up and put it back in the fridge in its paper jacket and let it chill down. And now you go and you cook something. You cook something with that as the water base. You could dilute it down a little bit if you got to add more water, or you could use it straight. And let's say it's pasta, you know, rice, you know, whatever it is, soup, beans, whatever it is, but you add MSM. MSM crystals, you could add the MSM capsules because it'll dissolve anyway, and the cellulose capsules will get into the water. You know, you put in not too much MSM because you don't want to make it disagreeably inhospitable, you know, untasty, unsavory to eat it. Because, you know, MSM is a little bitter. I'm not a big fan of bitter taste, but at any rate, the MSM there is a carrier of oxygen, and it'll raise the ability of the water solution to hold and retain oxygen, because water as it is only retains so much in the way of gases. MSM is a specialist, just like silver is, in absorbing and retaining and carrying oxygen. So by having the MSM there to mutually support the silver, because that's the key ingredient, is that the silver has to carry the oxygen. And although MSM is useful, The MSM will help the silver be even more useful by making sure that if and when the silver should lose its oxygen, if it should interact with a pathogen, and the loss of that oxygen will kill the pathogen, it's going to need to get oxygen from somewhere. And where is it going to get it if the water doesn't have much oxygen to begin with? So we've infused the silver with oxygen from the hydrogen peroxide, having pre-soaked the colloidal silver with hydrogen peroxide under refrigeration. And of course you store your hydrogen peroxide in the fridge, no doubt, because hydrogen peroxide is very unstable at room temperature. But it's like any bicarbonated fizzy drink. If you put the fizzy drink in the fridge and you uncap the bottle of the fizzy drink after you get it from the market, if it's been pre-chilled, the ability or the inability for that fizzy drink to lose the fizz is going to be aided by the pre-chilling factor, because when you drop the temperature of the liquid, it's able to retain that fizziness more readily and not lose it. Heat it, and of course you drive it off, just like when you cook cabbage. It smells up the whole house of the smell of cabbage because you have driven off these sulfur gases that were stored in the raw juices of the cabbage. So instead of the cabbage giving you a lot of gas, now in cooked form it gives you only a little gas, because most of the gas has gone into the air before you ate the cabbage when you cooked it. It's the same thing with the fizzy drink and the same thing with hydrogen peroxide. These are unstable gases, you know, the gases of raw food, the sulfur and the bicarbonate in raw juices of fruits and vegetables, and the unstable bicarbonation of fizzy drinks, and the unstable oxygen in hydrogen peroxide. So by pre-chilling it, we help the fluid retain the gas. But now we add MSM to the fluid before we cook it. We're creating the pot of, let's say, pasta, and we add the colloidal silver that has been suffused with hydrogen peroxide, the oxygen from the hydrogen peroxide, and we add MSM, and now we raise the boiling temperature. Now we're going to be driving off any free oxygen, obviously, certainly any of the hydrogen peroxide. Now I don't know about the oxygen and the silver. I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you that. Well, I'm not a scientist. I haven't in that field. I don't know. But we will not drive off the oxygen of the MSM. MSM is extremely stable. In fact, if we took DMSO and heated it up, it would break down to MSM. Oddly enough. So we want the MSM there before we raise the temperature of that pre-chilled liquid. And the MSM will be there. Now that here comes the next part. We're cooking a food, a meal, with all of these ingredients. Now what's going to happen? The bottle of the colloidal silver that I bought from Silver Solution Company, I think they're called silversolutionusa.com is their website. They say to take their colloidal silver apart from meals. In fact, 1 hour apart, both before and after, at least 1 hour. Why is that? I do not know. Maybe they're afraid that the form of the silver that they went to so much trouble to make in a format that would pass through the body within 24 hours and leave the body and not be retained by the body, so as not to run the risk of getting argyria. I don't have to worry about that, because I know how to get rid of argyria. I know how to prevent it. Just take all these 6 vitamins that we know now how to take, how much dosage, what the vitamins and minerals are, and the herbal supplement, the 6 of them, and it's the vitamin E, 3,000 IUs a day, vitamin C, 2,000 milligrams, 100 milligrams of yeast-free selenium, I think it's 2 heaping teaspoons of powdered kelp, or is it 1 heaping teaspoon? I can't remember. I think it's 2. And the last one was B-complex, 100. B-100, one a day. Now, it turns out, I think pretty much the reason why they say B-100 is because B-complex, by and large, is not very biocompatible. It's not very assimilatable. Part of the problem is that the folic acid is a problem. And if it's folate, that's A-T-E, folate, not folic acid, that will be more readily assimilatable. And of course, if it's methylcobalamin instead of cyanocobalamin, the methyl form will be much more readily available. And if you look for a B complex that has those two in those formats, you can be assured that the others are also in the correct format. Especially the folate will be the kicker. And then we probably don't need B100, you know? I don't know. I'm taking the Thorne Research, T-H-O-R-N-E, their version of B-complex, and it's not a B100. One of them, I can't remember which one, maybe, let's say it's the thymine, is like 120 milligrams, so it's a little higher than 100. And there's another one that's slightly high, but the others are low. So they're not all B100. But I think it's okay because it's all ergonomically bioavailable format of B-complex. But just to play it safe. Just to play it safe. I am upping the ante and taking more than one a day now. And I'm slowly increasing the vitamin E. I'm taking 3 each of 4 IUs. So now I'm up to 1,200 IUs. But I'm not up to 3,000 like I'm supposed to be. I'm taking the requisite amount of vitamin C and MSM. The MSM is supposed to be a heaping teaspoon, I recall now. And that turns out to be 5,000 milligrams of MSM. Yeah, a heaping teaspoon of MSM crystals is about 5,000 milligrams. I'm already doing a lot of the other stuff, and of course selenium, that's easy. You just, you know, take 100 micrograms of yeast-free selenium. That's not hard. Any rate, so we have this cure for argyria, so why worry about it? So my contention is, we have to do what the blue bloods, the royalty of Europe, did when and they avoided bubonic plague. But we have to do it efficiently. We have to do it cost effectively, because it's pretty darn expensive to go out and buy silverware, namely silver platters, silver pots, silver cups, not just the silver spoons and silver forks and knives. That's pretty, it's not efficient, okay? The efficient way is to do what I've said already. But one last kicker we have to do, and that's to eat it. Take it with the meal. What happens? We get all our digestive juices going, and we get it combined with food, and then our liver gets engaged. If all we do is drink the water, how much is our liver going to be involved in all of this? How much is our pancreas? How much is our gallbladder going to be involved in all of this? Not a whole lot, to some degree. But it's only when we sit down and eat a meal that all of our digestive secretion glands and organs start kicking in and getting involved, and then that silver will go straight to those organs and revivify them and rejuvenate them. And that's where it has to be rejuvenated first, is our digestion. If our digestion is sound, our immune system is going to be sound. I was born congenitally defective in both immunity and digestion. And guess what? They're related. When our white blood cells devour a pathogen, don't you think they're eating it? Just like our stomach eats food, the white blood cell is devouring pathogens in the bloodstream, outside the stomach, outside the intestines. They are mutually related. If you strengthen one, you strengthen the other. If you weaken one, you weaken the other. So we have to take this silver with the meal, not apart from the meal. But to be totally efficient about it, it has to be done the way I just described. And I won't repeat myself, because I know I love to do that, but I don't feel up to it. I feel so relaxed. I think I've killed off a lot of the liver flukes inside my liver. I know I have them, because I've gone swimming in the Y, and I felt that purifying action that the chlorine in the swimming pool had on my liver. I could feel it. It was killing off the flukes. That peace comes over me. That non-anxiety, that's why I was so obsessed about swimming in the Y. Of course, unfortunately, I'd swim naked and then they'd kick me out. But before I would get to that point, because I got so relaxed, I felt so trusting and comfortable with everybody, I just started swimming naked, Not right away. I'd kind of scale down my attire little by little, but I felt so trusting because I was so relaxed, so free of anxiety. And it's because I finally figured out how to do things without having to depend on other people to have to put up with me. I can do it in the privacy of my own home. How to take silver in the correct way such that it goes where it's needed. It's absorbed into the physiology. See, this is the problem we've been having all this time with colloidal silver, is how to get all of it, not just a little scant amount, but all of it across the mucosal membranous wall of the stomach and intestinal tract and get it into the physiology where it's needed most. Not just in the gut, but throughout the entire physiology. And this is how. Because MSM is the analog to DMSO. Hey, woohoo, haha. And this is what we have to do. We have to combine MSM with it. Not just hydrogen peroxide to make sure we suffuse the silver with oxygen, but to get MSM in there and then to combine it with a meal so that our whole physiology takes it. Remember, this is I have a whole folder devoted on my website, vinyasi.info. I linked to it from the front page. I can't remember the name of the folder because it's long and complicated. But it's devoted to turpentine. And the whole credibility of turpentine is to combine it with sugar, or, in my case, I like to combine it with food, although I don't bother taking it anymore because I don't need to, because I found a better way to do the same thing. And it's met its match. The turpentine sugar protocol has met its match, and I've just described earlier in this video what it is. It's the proper way to take silver, such that it crosses and gets into the body and is no longer a barrier to its use. And this is the crown of silver, is to fully engage its use with the physiology. And don't worry about it, Argyria. You've got the knowledge now of how to get rid of Argyria. So stop worrying. And welcome it. Hey, if you turn blue, beautiful. But in all likelihood, you won't, because you'll be using so little silver, so highly efficiently, that the risk you could possibly run of getting Argyria is like zero to none. I said the same thing. Zero to nothing. Zero to almost nothing. It is so small, it's like, why worry? Because you're using it so efficiently, the likelihood is not there. Now, it's true, I'm using a silverized nylon hood, manhood cover over my penis, so the head of my penis is turning blue. Okay. But my whole body probably won't turn blue because I'm learning how to use colloidal silver, internal use, in a way that's so efficient, there's no way I could run the risk of turning blue. I am so satisfied with what I did today with my pasta dish that it's unbelievable how peaceful, how loss of anxiety I now possess. Probably because I killed off pathogens where I needed to the most, in my liver. The liver flukes that have been besetting me for God knows how long. And not only that, I had a vegan meal when I had the pasta for lunch. I had beans with it and spaghetti sauce. And I had no desire to eat eggs or dairy products with the meal. I was totally sad. I just had a second helping of the beans and pasta and spaghetti sauce with the broccoli and the spices and herbs. It's like, and the churna finally did me some good. Usually, vata pitta churna doesn't do me a whole lot of good because I'm filled with so much anxiety. Probably driven by liver flukes, of all things. Because this is something new I learned recently, that the first place that our digestive churn, I think it's called churn, when the intestinal tract absorbs the nutrients from the food that empties out of our stomach, after the churl, excuse me, it's called churl. When we digest our food and it comes out of our stomach and gets absorbed by the intestines, where does it go? The first organ it goes to, absorbed by the bloodstream. I thought it just goes to the whole body. I was wrong. It goes to the liver. Because the liver is the next stage of digestion. It actually is part of the digestive process. After the nutrients leave our intestines, once they've been absorbed by the capillaries that line the intestinal wall, it goes straight to the liver. And so every meal I've been eating, I've been feeding the flukes in my liver. It's no wonder I'm filled with anxiety and all I can think of is fasting. It's no wonder I'm a nervous wreck. And I have a hard time enjoying a meal. I have a hard time just living. You know, Charlie used to say that liver is called the liver for a reason. He would say that the people who live in Rio de Janeiro don't get, you know, the winter to shock their liver to so they're all alcoholics. But in my case, it wouldn't make a difference. Well, yeah, I've got Hawaii temperature in my cabin. Yeah, it does make a difference because I go outside and I experience the cold. But I guess it helps me because, yeah, I've been able to eat fudge with no problem, but I still cannot put on weight. I'm as skinny as a toothpick. And I'm a nervous up the gazoo. And that's another thing. My electrosensitivity, I firmly believe now it's a two-part process. It's the fact that we live in an AC field, but it's also due to the fact that we have parasites of some kind in the physiology who they themselves are stressed by the AC field. They put out stress chemicals, stress-related chemicals, which stress us because they're toxic. They get rid of them, they dump it, and then we've got to deal with those chemicals, and we get stressed. So, yeah, we could turn off the power leading to our home. That's one way to solve it. Or we could just get rid of the pathogens. The parasites is the other way to solve it, or both, even better. Either way or both. So I think I've covered just about everything, and it's been a very blissful afternoon. I've just been laying in bed, napping and waking up and just laying there ever so lazily, enjoying the relaxation. I didn't even do a session today, and not because I was trying to overcome the session from yesterday merely and regain my anxiety again so I can have another stressful day tomorrow to give me an excuse for doing the session again, the BioCircuit session, but because I did a huge number on me just by the type of meal I ate. It was remarkable. Unbelievable. Now, I made the trouble to make sure my meal at lunch was totally cooked. I had raw fruit for breakfast. You know, I had some grapefruit and pineapple. But the lunch meal, nothing raw, no raw vegetables. And I sterilized everything. The beans were left over from like a day or two ago. I think it was 2 days ago. And I reheated them to sterilize them. So I wanted to make sure I didn't get any gas or bloat or upset tummy from eating lunch, from eating anything that was slightly fermented, slightly spoiled. So I have to be very careful. But now, when I cook beans, when I cook potatoes, when I cook pasta, when I cook rice, when I cook quinoa, when I cook oatmeal, I will make darn sure I will cook it the same way that I just described to you prior about how I cooked my pasta and broccoli today. Because I want to make darn sure it does not spoil under refrigeration, because everything in this cabin spoils, because it's loaded with the spores of yeast and the spores of mold. Within 2-3 days, it's gone. And on the tail edge of that, I tend to get a very upset tummy, because that's when I figure out that the food's no good anymore. I got to throw it away. And meanwhile, I got to deal with an upset tummy on top of which the food is spoiled and wasted. I got to dump it. So, you know, I had to solve these problems, and the problems are all wrapped up with each other. You know, wasting food, upset tummy, but also the fact that I live in a cabin that, you know, it's no mistake that it's 108 is my address, you know, so I'm following the dictates of the guru by being here, and that is to figure out How to be healthy once and for all. I'm 58 years old. I got to figure this thing out. How to be healthy under any circumstance. Well, my door faces west. And according to Vastu, that's not Vastu. According to Stipadyaveda, that's non-Vastu. That's avastu. That's lacking in Vastu. That's the negation of Vastu. Because for good health, it should face east. And for wealth, it should face north. For poverty, buy a house in which the entrance faces south. Or for poor health, buy a house, in my case, in which the entrance faces west. Well, you know, it's a funny thing. I fasted and did wheatgrass when I lived in my parents' home in Brentwood because our home faced its southwest. And that forced me to take upon myself these protocols of fasting and wheatgrass to overcompensate for the failure for the home to provide me with good health. And that's what has happened here. I have had to take on poor Vastu in the form of poor health in terms of the building orientation in order to overcome poor health because, hey, guess what? The place is loaded with yeast and mold. I can't grow any wheatgrass here. And I knew the next day after my first night sleeping here that there was something wrong with the air. Guess what? It's because this place is loaded with yeast and mold along with the dust, tons of dust, because there's no air circulation. It's just a box, a closed box. And I've got mushrooms that in the rainy season grows, sprouts up all around the cabin. Well, duh, they sprout up underneath the cabin. And it's not because I have the sewage drainage field, or whatever you call it, the septic field underneath the cabin. I was mistaken about that. It's simply because the bedrock, the granite bedrock, is so close to the surface of the earth around here that when it rains, the water has nowhere to go. And I'm also close to the water level of the Cowlitz River Valley, the Cowlitz River, that I'm within walking distance of the Cowlitz River. And I'm so close to that that literally the water fills up from the granite bedrock and literally forms puddles on the surface of the ground when the rain stops. The puddle can sit there for at least a day, if not 2 days, before the puddle goes away. That's how saturated the ground becomes with water. It's no wonder I get mushrooms growing up around the cabin as well as probably underneath the cabin, and all the spores come up. I know they do. They come up through the floorboards into the first floor here. And so when I try to grow wheatgrass, it's impossible. I mean, I've got YouTube episodes on my Hygiene 101 devoted to my attempt to try to solve the problem, and I never have. Well, I have with mold, and that's the use of borax. But the yeast, I still do not know how to solve. I've tried colloidal silver to water my wheatgrass. It just doesn't work. It works a little, but it's still, I still have mold and yeasts. You know, if I don't use borax, if I just use, strictly speaking, the colloidal silver. I haven't tried colloidal silver mixed with MSM, though. That might be worth trying, now that I think of it. Oh, that's worth trying. Okay, I'll try that. But, and I have solved the problem of spoiled milk. I just add colloidal silver and keep it refrigerated, and it won't go bad. So now I have yet to see if this new technique of cooking food with colloidal silver will help preserve it in the fridge, but I'll tell you, it does a number on my body. There is no question of what it does. So it really is the correct way to take colloidal silver is with the meal, with, you know, all those things. I'm not going to repeat myself. So this is the challenge. You know, Charlie used to say that you can do your astrological birth chart. You know, it has a certain validity, but mostly for people who don't meditate, because if you meditate, you rise above your birth chart. You rise above your birth karma. You rise above your environment, because now you're connecting with your soul and beyond your soul, you know, depending on what meditation practice you're doing. I mean, he was lecturing on behalf of transcendental meditators, but be that as it may, when we meditate, we go within and we contact the more refined levels of our individuality, and one of that is our soul. We literally can rise above our environment and our birth karma and rise above the challenges that confront us, regardless of what we were born with, and overcome them. I mean, that's the whole point anyway, right? I mean, we're born with challenges not to suffer, but to overcome, to learn the lessons that comes with overcoming the suffering that comes with that those challenges that confront us. I have grief over losing my son. That's a huge challenge. And I did Eric Dollard's analog computer as a biocircuit application, and that helped. And I did bathing, long soaks in hydrogen peroxide. That helped. But I have to also regenerate the body. That also helps. And not just do that during the biocircuit sessions, but doing during the meal, as a consequence, after the meal. So that every meal is a healing procedure, is a healing process of regenerating the physiology. So instead of our food killing us, it regenerates us. Wouldn't that be the ideal way, that every meal regenerates us? Every time we go to sleep at night, it regenerates us? Isn't that what we're supposed to do? This is what Viktoras Kolvinskas and Anne Wigmore tried to give us, and so few of us have been able to do it. Believe me, I tried, and I just couldn't. I couldn't latch on to it. A fully 100% raw food diet, and not just 100% raw food diet, but 100% raw food diet based on pre-digested nutrients. Sprouts, vegetables, fruits, no nuts unless it was made into a nut or seed yogurt, in which it's pre-digested with a lactobacillus culture from using Rejuvelac, let's say, for a totally vegan approach to breaking down that pureed nuts or seeds, you know, pureed in the blender. They would use Rejuvelac as the starter. And Rejuvelac is basically, not until recently did I figure out what Rejuvelac is. Rejuvelac, when you make it, you know, you ferment grain underwater, and then you refrigerate it to prevent it from going bad. It's basically, the culture is a mixed culture. Now, what's the word? It's a European drink. It's not yogurt. It's, there's a word for it. It's a combination of yeast and lactobacillus. And if I think of it, I'll attach it to this video episode. Now, let me stop and think about it. Maybe I'll... I'm not going to remember. I'm going to have to look it up. It's sold in the health food stores and in ethnic markets because it's a European drink, because it's a combination of yeast. Oh, God, it's on the tip of my tongue. It's a combination of yeast and lactobacillus, and they make it out of dairy. But what Anne Wigmore figured out was how to make it using just grain and water. And her favorite grain, I think, was at the Hippocrates Health Institute in Boston, Massachusetts, when I went and visited in 1974 in the spring, was pastry wheat. But I found the tastiest version for my taste buds was millet. But they use that as the basis to ferment the seeds. So when you ferment the seeds, it's going to be a lactobacillus culture, but it's also a yeast culture too. And so you have to make sure you refrigerate. Once you get the culture going, you refrigerate it so it doesn't turn into alcohol. I can't remember the term. I'm sorry, I could have helped you here. But it's a specific European dairy drink, but it's not yogurt. And I can't remember the name of it. Anyway, that's what they use to pre-digest the seed blended, the pureed seeds and nuts, so that it would be pre-digested. But also sprouts and wheatgrass and buckwheat lettuce and sunflower greens and seaweed and fruits and vegetables and juices, raw juices and wheatgrass juice. And no supplements. They didn't do vitamin supplements. They didn't believe in it. And fasting and wheatgrass implants. If you know what a wheatgrass implant is, look it up. I won't describe it. You shoot it up your butt. You do a water enema first, and then you do a wheatgrass. You put wheatgrass up your butt. And then you let it go out. And that way you absorb it in your butt. And David Wolfe likes to joke that he gave up trying to promote wheatgrass implants because the fact of the matter is nobody's interested. Well, I couldn't support a raw food diet. I did a complete fast, which few people have ever been able to do on this planet. Arnold Arendt managed to do it, and apparently Victorious Kolvinskas managed to do it, apparently, but it's not that easy. Few people have been able to do it, but as Johanna Brandt says in her little book, The Grape Cure, once you do a complete fast, it's very hard to stick to a raw food diet because you want to eat like crazy. You get a humongous appetite to eat like you've never eaten before in your life. And it's very hard to stay on a raw food 100% diet. And I failed to when the fast completed itself. Because you don't break the fast. I mean, the fast breaks itself. The body does a complete reversal. And then you just start eating like there's no tomorrow. So I was eating ice cream and peanut butter and honey and bread like there was no tomorrow. Those were my four foods of choice, and in humongous quantity. And not raw peanut butter either. Nothing was raw. Everything was cooked. Yeah, everything was cooked. That's right. Or else pasteurized. You know, the honey was pasteurized. Everything was cooked. So I was eating like crazy, and ice cream bucketfuls, and honey and peanut butter and bread, like three-quarters of a loaf, three-quarters of everything, except for the honey. Yeah, I did not eat three-quarters of a canister, a five-gallon or five-pound canister of honey, not necessarily. I just ate a lot of honey. But three-quarters of a loaf of bread, three-quarters of a pound of peanut butter, what was the other thing? Bread, peanut butter, honey. Oh, and ice cream, yeah. Well, I probably was eating three-quarters of a half-gallon of ice cream. I think I was. I was eating humongous amounts of food. Anyway, it's needless to say, I didn't stay on a raw food diet like I thought. I tried. That part of the procedure of Johanna Brandt, I tried to do it, but I couldn't keep it up. So I guess I just wasn't ready for it. I was fasting because of my poor health, along with the Kundalini that was happening, not because it was my nature, although I was conceived as a raw food vegan. I wasn't born that way. So I kind of have a mixed mental type I'm not really 100% gung-ho on raw food, but who knows? I may turn into a raw fooder. Who knows? This proper procedure of using silver colloid, yeah, I just bought a sprouter online, and I'm waiting for it to be delivered, a little sprouter, because, you know, I want to grow sprouts, bean sprouts. I want to grow fenugreek and red clover. Those are my two favorite seed sprouts of choice, is red clover and fenugreek. But I may have some other seeds as well. I think I'm going to try growing some others possibly. But those in particular, I know those are my favorite. And it may require that I use this colloidal silver mixture that I've described to you in order to rinse the sprouts with this mixture to make sure I don't get any mold growing. You know, any mold, any yeast killing the sprouts, because I'd have a hell of a time growing sprouts in my cabin. So this may be why I cooked my pasta this way, because I expect to get the seed sprouter delivered probably tomorrow. So I may have to do it this way to prevent mold. And who knows, I may become a raw food vegan yet. I may fulfill Victorious Kolvinskas and the spirit of our dearly departed Anne Wigmore yet, because I feel I failed them. And, you know, not because I wanted to, but because I just didn't know how to come off the fast and eat a 100% raw food diet. In a sense, I failed my father, because he was a hygienist. You know, he didn't do sprouts, he didn't do seaweed, but he stayed away from supplements, and he did nuts and seeds, but he didn't know to ferment them. He didn't know how to. When I was at MIU in the late 70s, I made seed cheeses and seed yogurt. Oh, they were so tasty. I would take whole, unhulled sesame seed. And this is unhulled with all the oxalic acid, you know, that we're not supposed to consume. It's okay, because you break it down with this fermentation procedure, and you can make the most tasty seed cheeses and seed yogurts, and you don't have to worry about the oxalic acid prohibiting your absorption of calcium, because it all gets broken down. And I would take it one step further. I would take thyme, powdered thyme, and blend it with the seed cheese when I would blend it up before I fermented it. And then I would make the seed cheese out of it and whatnot. It tasted like spaghetti sauce. It was so sumptuous when you ferment an herb with the seed fermentation. It is so tasty. I'm going to have to look it up and add it to this video file. The name of that traditional dairy drink that European ancestry, shall we say, or culture, if I have to use the word culture, a cultured dairy drink from European culture that's a combination of both yeast and lactobacillus, but it does not produce alcohol if you do it right. And Ann Wigmore called it Rejuvelac, and Victoris Kovinskas called it Rejuvelac. Anyway, you know, I may become a raw food vegan for all I know, because I'm living in a Hawaii temperature cabin. You know, there's nothing to stop me in terms of temperature. It's just I don't know how to do it. The technique that's needed by my body to make it effortless, because there's no way I'm going to strain at this. I mean, I couldn't do it when I came off the fast when I was 19. I certainly have not been able to do it since then. And not because I don't want to, because I know that's the ideal way to eat, is the way that Victoris Kovinskas eats. I just haven't been able to do it, and I don't know how. And maybe this is what I need to do, is to fulfill what they set out to do for the rest of humanity that is struggling with this, the few of us who struggle with raw food and can't do it, and so we don't. And we wish we could, but we can't. It's just not effortless for us. Maybe this is why, because we have to make sure that every meal ensures that all of the pathogens, particularly parasites, get killed off. I mean, I've tried chlorine dioxide, doesn't work for me. It's so harsh. It just doesn't work. Now, hydrogen peroxide, it's true, it's a sterilizing medium, but it's unstable. So even if I didn't cook my meals, and if I just used it to water my sprouts, I know it's not going to stay there with the food. It's going to bubble out of solution, but I'll have the MSM there and the colloidal silver to retain the oxygen that is so desperately needed. And not just the MSM alone, but the silver especially so, along with the MSM, to kill the pathogens, especially the parasites, inside my physiology, especially my liver. The one place I need it the most. But I probably need it in a few other organs, for all I know. Probably the pancreas and the spleen and the gallbladder. All those nifty little organs. So, who knows? I may fulfill you, Ann Wigmore, yet. Because I may have been a disappointment, for all I know, you know? When you died in that fire in the Boston location of the Hippocrates Health Institute, because you had no smoke detectors in your building, it was a horrible loss when we lost you, because you did so much. You helped Victoris, and through Victoris, he helped all of us. He gave us survival into the 21st century. And recipes for what was his recipe book called? I forget the name of it. That he had the picture of Dick Gregory on the back, and Victoris, the two of you. I mean, these were beautiful people who helped show us the way to a new tomorrow. But how many of us can go there? I have not been able to, not because I haven't tried. And, I mean, not to, you know, I took fasting to the limit, but I just didn't know how to eat. To follow up on that complete fast and do it in an effortless manner. I think it shows that I've had parasite problems ever since I was born. I'm pretty sure, at least the age of 8 when I got a kitty. You know, cats are an easy way to get parasites into your household. But I'm pretty sure I had parasites from birth. And I think that's why my mom failed to give birth to me the first time she got, or the second time she got pregnant, which was probably the first time she would have had me, because I'm pretty sure that miscarriage was me trying to come into this world. And she had to start eating cooked food to be able to have me because of parasites. Not because there was anything wrong with the diet. Well, there was something wrong with the diet. We were alcoholics. The family was a family of alcoholics. But that's a whole nother sidebar, which I probably have already described in prior episodes, so I'm not going to go over it again. But parasites is the real problem. The alcoholism probably was there to mask it. Yeah. It was probably my father's way, inadvertently, to try to kill off the parasites. And of course it doesn't work, because it weakens the physiology. So you either, you know, you do one thing, but it's at the expense of something else, the immune system. And definitely on a raw food diet, alcohol is the last thing you want to consume. So, I think I've finally solved the problem. We'll see. We'll see if each meal now heals me. And if it's true, then that means I'll be able to go back to raw food. Because it's certainly warm enough in this cabin. I make it 82, 84. So it's not for lack of temperature. It's purely because I just don't know, have not known how. Maybe now I know how. Maybe now I'll be able to, I still don't know how to grow wheatgrass, but I'm going to try this special mixture on my sprouts. And maybe, yeah, I'll grow a little wheat berries and see if I can grow them without mold forming. Because it's so easy for them to turn sour and produce alcohol and go bad on me. Because I can taste it. I can smell it, if anything. So maybe this will... But see, I'll have to run my silver generator nonstop. Which is a lot, which means I'll probably have to buy a bulk generator. I know this other fellow produces a bulk silver colloidal generator. You can make your colloidal silver by the gallon instead of by the liter. In fact, you can make it in a 5-gallon bucket for all, you know. He has two models. He has a commercial model for a 5-gallon bucket, and he has a home unit for a smaller jug or gallon size bucket container, and it's the 5-gallon that interests me, because that's the one that I would have to use if I grow sprouts, because I would have to produce colloidal silver in large quantity. You know, I may want to do that. Well, as soon as I can afford to. At the moment, I have not been able to afford to. Huh. Wow. Priorities, how to spend the money. Well, I guess this is a good point as any to sign off, but this is what it looks like. It looks like I'm going to be able to take this healing several steps further than what I could have imagined with these BioCircuit sessions. Now my meals are going to be healing. And that's beautiful, the food should heal us and rejuvenate us. That's uncanny. That's just purely uncanny. But that's what it feels like. I felt today after lunch the same way as if I had a BioCircuit session with Robert O'Becker's circuits. It was that beautiful. So, God knows. Maybe this is a whole new stage of development here. God only knows. Kefir. Oh, I knew it was a K sound. I just couldn't get my mind around it. It's also called Bulgaros. And it's a yeast bacterial fermentation. Well, but it's... Well, yeah, I don't know if even it has lactobacillus in it. I thought it did. Existed in the Russian language, kefir, at least since 1884. It's probably of North Caucasian origin, although some sources see a connection to Turkic. Kopur, foam. Kefir has become the most commonly used term, but may be known by other names in different geographic regions. Oh, yeah, here we go. Kefir grains are a combination of lactic acid bacteria and yeast, and a matrix of protein, lipids, and sugars. in this symbolic matrix, or scopy, forms grains that resemble cauliflower. For this reason, a complex and highly variable community of lactic acid bacteria and yeasts can be found in these grains, although some predominant lactobacillus species are always present. Even successive batches of kefir may be different to each other due to factors such as the kefir grains rising out of the milk while fermenting, or curds forming around the grains, as well as room temperature. Well, the grains they're referring to the culture, the symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeasts is what a kefir grain is, and they have a picture here. This I'm looking on Wikipedia under the entry for kefir. So it's, yeah, kefir is what the word I was looking for. So that's what the basis is for Rejuvelac, except they're just not using dairy. They're using grain underwater and to start the culture, and then you put it in the fridge to slow it down to prevent it from turning into alcohol. Oh, the composition of kefir depends greatly on the type of milk that was fermented. Oh, I'm sorry, forget that. So, and then they would use that to ferment the nuts and seeds blended with that. I remember they made a very good one with cashews, was very tasty, but I tended to use unhulled sesame because of the high calcium content, and it would break down the oxalic acid, so it didn't prohibit my absorption of the calcium. It actually aided it because it had all this lactic acid in there, which overrode the oxalic acid. It may have even broken down the oxalic acid for all I know. I don't know, but I know it had no problem digesting the sesame seed, the hull of the sesame seed, when it's broken down in that manner with kefir. So anyway, it's very, read up on the whole page at Wikipedia. My goodness, it's a lot of information there. I withheld the recipe on the so-called Fountain of Youth that I think I've stumbled on because I was missing an ingredient and I didn't realize it. So now I'm ready to share it with you. The problem, though, is that we're programmed to avoid the Fountain of Youth because of our fear of becoming colored. Among us white people, we're afraid of becoming a colored person, a person of color, a person of Argyria, because we have this innate fear that there's no other way to approach the Fountain of Youth, not knowing that there's a cure for it, a prevention, by taking the six herbal vitamin mineral supplements in the correct dosage to avoid or cure ourselves of a pre-existing condition of Argyria. So I think there's a certain fear of racism or a fear of becoming a colored person that causes us to avoid the appropriate use of silver, such that the silver is more than just merely useful in the gut, but crosses the gut and goes into the body and becomes useful to the entire physiology. And that element is the element of solubility of silver. Silver colloid is not very soluble, and it's not really a part of the metabolism of the physiology in the current state of the culture of our country, or of our Western civilization for that matter, in how we utilize silver. We still are antagonistic, we're still afraid, we're still repelled by the thought of endearing ourselves to silver such that we would make use of silver in a manner in which the silver would be highly bioavailable as a nutrient, not as something that simply passes through the gut, not as something that simply passes through the urine, but something that becomes a part of the flesh and could risk us turning blue, gray, or blue-gray, for that matter. Colored. A colored person. So, the missing ingredient was acidity. was what I had failed to consider in my formulation, but there are other elements to the formulation because we have to understand what the silver is doing. It's a carrier of oxygen. And there are two other carriers of oxygen, vitamin C and MSM. And it just so happens that both vitamin C and MSM are two of the four ingredients for the cure or prevention of argyria when taken in appropriate amounts. But in this formulation that I'm considering of the so-called Fountain of Youth, it's far less vitamin C and MSM that would justify considering them as being a prevention of argyria. They're there to help the silver do its job, and they're not necessarily there to prevent argyria. So if you want to prevent argyria, you have to take more vitamin C and more MSM than what I'm about to describe in this so-called Fountain of Youth formulation. So the first consideration is the fact that silver is a sponge for oxygen. So we create silver colloid, you know, 5 parts per million of colloidal silver. We make it in distilled water. We have it chilled, and then we add hydrogen peroxide, food grade hydrogen peroxide, to suffuse the silver with oxygen. And then before we use it, we add MSM to add still more oxygen to the water. And we also add something sour, such as lemon juice. And out of convenience, I use freeze-dried lemon juice crystals of, I think it's the brand name is True Lemon. Just out of convenience, you know. It's just because I'm too lazy to squeeze a lemon, you know. I won't get into that. I'm a bachelor. What do you want? So I add a little bit of that, but for taste. So I add MSM to taste, and I add lemon juice to taste. In other words, I don't add too much MSM such that the water is so bitter that I don't want to drink it. Yet I also only add the minimum amount of lemon juice crystals such that, you know, I don't overdo it and make it so sour that I don't want to drink it. But the objective with the sour is to cause some of the particles of the colloidal silver to dissolve into the water as silver citrate. And we are told not to do that, not to take silver in the form of citrate, chloride, nitrate, any of those acidic or any of those salts that will readily show up as a bluing or graying of the skin. Yet why worry about it? It's only 5 parts per million of colloidal silver that we're starting with in the first place, so the chances of turning blue or gray are next to nothing or nothing. Well, let's say next to nothing, because it's there, but it would be like microscopic. It would be like so scant. I mean, how would you notice it without the help of a microscope, you know? But let's take the position that, okay, maybe it's not microscopic. Maybe it could actually happen. But we have the cure. So why worry about it? Vitamin C, MSM, kelp, B-complex, yeast-free selenium, and a massive dose of vitamin E that you gradually build up to. Why worry about it when we know how to get rid of silver from the body? Or for that matter, prevent it becoming lodged within the body. Why worry about it? And even if it did become lodged, you'd be free of disease. The blue bloods of Europe, the story goes, prevented bubonic plague among themselves because they ate their food off of silverware. Well, they could afford to, but that's the inefficient way to do this. The formulation I just described is the efficient way. The problem is that we don't have portraits of these so-called blue bloods. I mean, I can't remember seeing any. All we have is the East Indian tradition that blatantly comes out with their portraitic depictions of Krishna, Shiva, Rama, and Sukadeva, just to name four, who are either blue, or in the case of Sukadeva, he was kind of grayish. They depict him as more like gray. whereas Rama, Krishna, and Shiva are depicted as, you know, pure blue. So I don't know what's going on there. Are they blue for some other reason, for some other racial reason? Because Charlie Lutz said there was a blue race, and Edgar Casey, was it? No, I think it was Charlie Lutz who just... No, it was the Urantia book. Charlie Lutz and the Urantia book both convey the thought that there actually were colored races of those colors, and they mark the evolution of the human race. At the moment, though, there's no such thing as a race of color, because we're all white. It's just we don't look that way yet. And that transformation happened on the subtle plane within the last 200 years, somewhere around in that period of time. It's just we haven't mixed enough yet. In other words, that change at the subtle plane has not come out to the gross plane as of yet. But by the end of the Aquarian dispensation, we will have all have become thoroughly so mixed that there won't be any separation or division among us in terms of color anymore. We'll pretty much be an agglomeration of a singular race. But at any rate, this fear of Argyria, I feel, is a fear of becoming colored. And so, instead of fearing it, embrace it. But with the knowledge that we can either prevent it or cure it, or at least minimize it to the degree that it will hardly be noticeable or it won't even be noticeable. Because we have effective technology now to use so little silver in the form of 5 parts per million colloidal silver imbued distilled water, that where's the risk? I mean, come on, 5 parts per million of silver? That's like nothing. So, the fountain of youth is oxygen, but done in a way that is highly utilizable, okay? So, ultimately, it's oxygen. Because the fountain of youth, what did Charlie Lutz say? He said that our breaths are numbered. And you can deviate that slightly to either increase or diminish the quantity of breaths that we are allotted in this life. In other words, we can slightly lengthen or shorten our lifespan. But more or less, it's fixed based on the number of breaths that we have been allotted. Now, what did we learn from meditation, from the pursuit of yoga? We've learned that when we go within, our metabolism slows down and we take less breath. We breathe more shallowly. We breathe very shallow because our oxygen needs are reduced. Well, what have I learned when I do these biocircuitry experiments? I go into a deep state of sleep, similar to hibernation of bears, let's say. Or on rare occasion, I might even experience samadhi rather than sleep. But it's such a deep state of rest that I breathe less. Okay, I'm using less oxygen. What have I learned about this formulation of this so-called fountain of youth formulation, this way to prepare water? Well, I'm suffusing it with oxygen. Not just because I put MSM in there, but because I'm using colloidal silver imbued with, or saturated with oxygen transferred from hydrogen peroxide, food-grade hydrogen peroxide. And then I add MSM on top of that, a carrier of oxygen. And then I add lemon juice, which has vitamin C, and vitamin C is a carrier of oxygen, too. So I have 3 carriers of oxygen, silver, well, 4, silver, hydrogen peroxide, MSM, and the vitamin C content of lemon juice. 4 carriers of oxygen to reduce the need to breathe. Because if I keep drinking water throughout the day made of this formulation, or anything else we can think of adding, to add as a carrier of oxygen, I won't have to breathe so much because the bloodstream, the hemoglobin, won't have to work so hard to carry oxygen. That means I won't have to breathe so often because my bloodstream and the juices, shall we say, of my body fluid will be more highly saturated with oxygen. Not just the bloodstream, but all the fluids of the body will be more highly saturated with oxygen. So the fountain of youth is oxygen, but it has to be carried by water to all the parts of the body. That's the only technique we have at the moment. And so the fountain of youth is a means of transforming water into a highly efficient methodology of delivering oxygen to the entire physiology. There you have it. The reason why I say the vitamin C content of lemon juice is because there are other fruit juices that have even greater vitamin C. The juice of bell peppers, the juice of guava is actually a very good example of a fruit juice that has a very high content of vitamin C. There's acerola cherry that grows in South America that has a very high content of vitamin C. So these are natural sources of vitamin C from various fruits, peppers, acerola cherry, and guava, that have even more vitamin C than lemon juice has. In fact, as I recall, Victoris Kolvinskas claimed that mung bean shoots, when grown in the dark, as they are normally grown, have as much vitamin C as the vitamin C content of lemon juice. You wouldn't know it. I mean, you know, mung bean shoots are anything but sour. I mean, they might have a little bit of a tang to them, maybe, but no more than a lot of other vegetables. Yet, it's the citric acid of lemon juice that throws us off, because then we think, oh, it must have a lot of vitamin C. No, it doesn't. It has a lot of other things, like bioflavonoids and things that help the liver. So lemon juice has its own values, but when it comes to vitamin C, it doesn't have a whole lot. I just thought I'd mention that because vitamin C is an oxygen-carrying compound. And so if we're looking to improve the formulation of this so-called fountain of youth, we might want to choose a mix, a blend of various fruit juices to put into this so-called water solution of colloidal silver, and that might include things like, you know, guava juice or acerola cherry, or, you know, something else besides just lemon alone, or instead of lemon. Well, I don't know about instead of lemon, but maybe in addition to lemon. Just some ideas.